are elderberries, a fruit prized in the past, also the main crop of the future. Many cultures have valued the elderberry. Hippocrates listed it as a prominent medicinal. Native American cultures, gypsies in Europe, even Stone Age people in Switzerland believed that elderberries healed many ailments, including the flu. And wine made from elderberries has been popular through the centuries. Jane Austen drank elderberry wine. Elton John sang about it. Early settlers to New England often planted elderberry bushes near their homes. Maybe your grandmother made elderberry wine. Well, now an increasing number of Maine farmers are growing elderberry bushes and believe this crop has great potential for growth. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn more about efforts to make the little elderberry big again. Do you drink elderberry tea? Elderflower liqueur? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Quick, name a small, dark purple berry that grows in Maine and has uses ranging from pies, jams, and juices to healing and health benefits. If you said blueberry, I couldn't blame you, but today we are talking about another dark purple berry with many benefits, the elderberry. It is native to our state and in recent years has seen a growing demand. So could the elderberry be the next big crop in Maine? Well, that's what we're going to discuss. Tori Lee Jackson is here. She is an extension educator and associate professor of agriculture and natural resources at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension based in Lisbon Falls. Ethan Foyt is an organic elderberry farmer who owns Scarecrow Farm in Monmouth. He's also an educator in the Lewiston schools. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you ever tasted elderberries? Would you be interested in growing them? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to you both. Ethan, I'm going to start with you. How did you get into elderberry farming?
I wanted to make wine, and at that time, the grapes really hadn't taken off in Maine. There was still a lot of people cautioning about growing grapes in the state. So researching what else makes great wine, elderberries kind of popped. And I tried some and thought it was a great path to go down.
How long ago was this?
It was about 7 years.
Okay, so what did you do then? How many elderberry bushes did you plant? How soon till they were ready?
I started with four, and they took over my driveway. and I made wine 2 years after that, I believe, out of them, and it was great. And my wife and I decided that if we were going to try to do something like that, we needed a little more room. We had 1 acre at the time, and it wasn't quite enough. So we found a property with a few more acres, and immediately planted 200 elderberry trees, and since then have planted another 300.
So now you have 500?
500 trees, 200 that are in production.
Okay, and that's interesting. An elderberry is a tree, not a bush.
It's referred to a tree.
Tori's laughing.
It's kind of both. If you look at it, it's a bush. It's referred to as a tree, but it's more bush-like.
Okay, Tori, how about you? What's your elderberry story?
Sure. Well, actually, it really comes from working with people like Ethan and other growers who, in the past, 10 or 15 years have been dabbling with elderberry as a commercial crop and really looking for some of that basic research you might find when you're looking for information on how to grow blueberries, for example. And coming to the traditional resources like Cooperative Extension, we just didn't have information such as variety trial data, what are the best varieties to grow here, what can you do with the fruit, even food safety information. It just didn't exist for elderberry. So growers like Ethan and others came to Extension and me specifically and said, hey, can you help us out? And that is how I got involved back in, I guess, 2014.
Okay. And what have you learned in that time?
Oh, gosh. So much. I've spent a lot of my career working with small fruits and vegetables, but elderberry was kind of always at the periphery. We didn't really consider it in the commercial realm so much here, which is kind of too bad. It is a native plant, so it does have a lot I think, to offer to us, and it could potentially be a little bit easier to grow than some of the other things that we do here.
Okay, so in the years, Ethan, that you've been growing elderberries, who are you only making wine with them, or do you do other things with them, and who are your customers?
I'm actually not making wine right now. The original purpose for growing them was wine, and our original plan was a farm winery, but as we got into it, we realized that there was a better niche in organic elderberries for different products in the state. We've sold to Maine Medicinals the past 2 years, and it's they're worth a little bit more right now as an organic fruit as opposed to a wine, if they're organic.
Okay, so people are buying elderberries and then doing what they will with them.
Yes.
Interesting. And where are they sold? Are they sold at farmers markets, or is this wholesale?
You can find them. I sell mine wholesale. You can find them in farmers markets. You can find them in health stores. You can find them dried. You can find them frozen. You can find them on Amazon. You can find them in health, like any place that you would find health food type things.
Okay. So how many farmers like you are there, Ethan? Tori, do you keep track? How many people are farming elderberries in Maine right now?
Well, we don't have a formal way of keeping track like we do for some of the other commodity crops. We do have a new organization, the Maine Elderberry Growers Association, where the folks who have found extension, who are thinking about expanding their production, have joined. And we've got maybe 15 or 20 people who are really committed to that group. But we don't have a good grasp on exactly how much commercial production is out there. My estimate is probably between 30 and 35 acres of cultivated elderberries. However, because it is a native plant, it's also heavily foraged in the state of Maine. A lot of people base some of their microenterprises on foraged fruits and flowers as well.
Okay. So where does an elderberry plant grow well?
It loves water, and it loves marginal land. So people that fly fish, people that brook fish, will see them a lot on streams, brooks, because there's a break in the forest where they can get light and there's water for them. Freshly cut land, you're going to find them. They're going to pop in there first before the birches and other trees start to grow. Any place where they can reach light and where they're going to have water, they're going to pop up.
Yeah, we see them a lot in transitional landscapes along roadsides. I hear a lot of people looking, especially foragers, along railroad tracks, particularly if it's there's a stream nearby.
It seems to me that if I'm a farmer and I have some land that is difficult to put other kinds of crops in, this might be a crop that's sort of the swampy area in my property, or
potentially. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say swampy, because that makes me think of standing water all of the time. But, you know, sort of on the borders of those areas, the other things to consider for a farmer aren't just the soil type, but accessibility. So if you're going to be in there working with the crop, you still need to get, you know, maybe a tractor over it. So you don't want it to be too wet.
Okay. Ethan, what do you think is the potential for this crop?
Well, I think it's a great crop for Maine. I think it's a great crop for people like me that might not be a full-time farmer. But want something on the side. It's a hard crop to grow a lot of because they don't ripen at the same time. When I pick my elderberries, it might stretch three and a half weeks, and I think that would be tough for somebody that is growing hundreds and hundreds of acres and want to harvest all at the same time. But for somebody like me that only has like an hour or two a night to harvest, it's a great crop.
When you say pick your elderberries, are you out there with your fingers picking them off one at a time? Please say no.
No. It's not quite that labor intensive. They grow on something called an umbra. Before the berries grow, it almost looks like a large Queen Anne's lace. And then the berries will come in on that. So we'll cut that. We'll cut the umbra, put it in a bucket. And then there's a few different ways to get it off. Some people will freeze those, put them in garbage bags, freeze them. And then they'll fall off. Other people will take them and beat them against plastic buckets, and they'll fall off. Other people will, at that point, just go through with their fingers and pull them off.
Okay. What does an elderberry taste like?
Oh, gosh, that's a hard question, because if you're eating them raw, you want to be a little bit careful. There is some built-in toxicity to elderberry, and so typically you want to cook them somehow and heat them to break down some of those toxins.
Kind of like rhubarb that way.
Yes, somewhat. You can try a few fresh. It's an interesting flavor. It's a little bit unique.
It's bitter.
It's a little bit bitter. I would say it's an acquired taste on its own.
Not a lot of people are going to walk through the woods and eat 2 or 3 pounds of elderberries like they would blueberries.
Yeah, it's a great ingredient to put in other things, and brings an interesting flavor to drinks and pies and baked goods and all sorts of other things.
We did a Maine Calling program recently on cocktails, and I understand elderberry is something people will add to a cocktail.
And brandy, make wine out of it. Yeah, it's pretty common for cocktails.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Did your grandmother make elderberry wine? Do you have elderberries in your yard? One of the things I thought was interesting learning about elderberries as I was doing some reading this morning is that a lot of people who settled New England would plant an elderberry bush or two. It was sort of standard, and many old homesteads have old bushes.
Yeah, when you walk through the woods and you find like the bones of an old house, sometimes like the granite blocks of the basement, most of the time you'll see an old apple tree there or a couple old apple trees standing there. If you look closer, you might see the remains of what were elderberries at one point. Maybe not the elderberries that the settler planted, but the relatives of those elderberries.
So people in the 1700s, 1800s knew what to do with elderberries.
Well, they were coming from Europe with that knowledge. Elderberries are very intertwined in European culture, and the people that were settling New England were from Europe. So as they came to these shores, there was like an old friend already growing here. They knew exactly what to do with it.
How did we lose our knowledge? How did it come that people don't?
Sometime during my father's generation and my grandfather's generation, it disappeared. You know, somewhere between Buck Rogers and grocery stores and TV dinners, it just people stopped getting it because it's not as easy to grow commercially.
It's not. It's not like having an apple tree in the yard. It's not as easy to grow commercially. And the big reason that we have kind of pointed to is that in the 60s and 70s, we experienced a crash of the native populations. And so for a few, you know, maybe a generation, it kind of fell out of what people would find in their backyards. We think that that was due to a virus, the tomato mosaic virus, and that was the first thing that we wanted to see when we decided, are we going to invest more time and money and energy into developing this industry if we've got this virus out there in the world that's just going to decimate any increase in crop. So in 2015, I did a survey around the state of about 15 locations looking for the virus, and I couldn't find it. So based on that, we have decided to move forward and do some more research, hoping that conditions are better than they were back in the 60s and 70s for elderberries.
If someone's not a farmer but is listening, is maybe a gardener and is listening to this and thinking, maybe I'll put in a couple bushes, what should they know? Is it better? Is it like many other fruits where it's better to put in a few than just one?
Absolutely. They are wind pollinated. Certainly the bees and other pollinators get to work in there, but primarily we're looking at wind pollination. So having more than a few is better than one or two. Having a couple of different varieties so they can cross-pollinate, always a good idea for better fruit set. Better quality fruit. But I think this plant is ideal for the backyard. It's a wonderful addition to the landscape. It adds interest and color. The stems of an elderberry are a beautiful bright purple color, and it can be just as suitable as an ornamental than as a fruit crop.
Okay. How much space should I give them, Ethan? Let's say my husband, the avid gardener, thinks two or three. How much space?
Mine are 2 feet apart. I want them to make a hedge.
Okay.
But a lot of people that are just planting two or three don't want to do that. They want the like them to be to grow as much as they want. So if you're just planting two or three, I'd give them 8 feet, and that will give them enough space where they're not going to touch each other.
Okay. And a place in your yard that's not too dry.
Yeah. The enemies of elderberries, especially young elderberries, is drying out. And grass. If you can protect them from the grass and give them plenty of water for the first 2 or 3 years, then they should do really well.
Okay. We have so many calls coming in. I'm going to go a little early. I'm going to go to Josh in Bangor. Hi, Josh. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thanks. A couple of years ago, I had the opportunity to make wine out of elderberries, and I found that there was a bunch of sort of a yellowish residue left on my equipment behind from the juice of the elderberries. Super sticky, really hard to get off. What is that about?
Yeah, the first time I made elderberry wine, I thought I had ruined it. I opened up where my buckets that I was fermenting in and saw that. It looked like the scene from Ghostbusters where Slimer had just gone through the library. It's a substance that's created when you make elderberry wine. And the research that I did basically said wash it with an oil, like an olive oil, and it'll come off.
Good luck, Josh. Thanks. I'm going to go to Shansan, calling from Norway. Hi, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. I am a home farmer, a home-grown farmer in Norway, and I'm listening to your radio every time you have interesting subject like this. And your guest on the show right now, he is talking about he has about 300 to 500 elderberry trees, and he's selling them at a wholesaler. And also you have the association that I can join, and I would like to see that how I can join it. And I would like to turn my 40 acres of organic land certified by USDA into the elderberries in the future. So maybe can you help me with this, how to do it, and who do you sell it to as a wholesaler for wine, medicine, liqueur, that sort of thing?
Shansan, thank you. Go ahead.
So our organization, the best way to get a hold of us is on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, Maine Elderberry Growers Network. And if you find that and ask to join, the person that's in charge of letting people in will definitely let you in. If you're looking to make your land organic, certified organic, that would be MOFCA. If you contact MOFCA, they're the people in this state that are kind of in charge of certifying somebody as an organic grower. And if you start off with those two organizations, the Maine Elderberry Growers Network for information on elderberries and MOFCA for how to go through the certification process, those would be the two best ways to start.
And Tori, if she's in Norway, she's not too far from you.
No.
All could connect for information as well. How would someone connect with you?
Absolutely. The best way to reach me is always via email. And my address is Tori, T-O-R-I, .Jackson@maine.edu. I can definitely get you on the mailing list so you can find out when meetings are coming up. So far, they have typically been held at my office in Lisbon Falls, at the Extension office right there on Main Street. We've also done some field tours in the past. We've gone out to farms like Ethan's in Monmouth. We've been to the Bailey Farm in Freeport. So I think there's potential to go and see other operations as well for members.
Yeah, and our next meeting's October 17th, if we don't push that back.
That's
okay,
right.
And I'll try to put a link after the program to the Maine Elderberry Growers Network on our Maine Calling Facebook page. We'll go to David, who's calling from Florida. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I've got a couple of questions. First one is, what's the difference between a huckleberry and an elderberry?
I believe a huckleberry is more of a blueberry, more closely related to a blueberry, isn't it?
Yeah, they're different species altogether. We don't have a lot of huckleberries
in Maine.
I was recently hiking in Acadia, and I came across a young couple picking huckleberries,
oh, yeah.
And I sampled one, so kind of small world. But yeah, David, a different crop. Thanks so much for calling in, and we do at this point need to take a break. If you'd like to call in, if you'd like to join the conversation, we'd love to hear your stories about elderberries and maybe how people in your family have used them. 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Federation of Farmers Markets. Maine has farmers markets every day of the week. Locate one near you at mainefarmersmarkets.org. And WEX, providing global payment solutions for the fleet, travel, and health industries. Career opportunities at wexinc.com.
Did your high school science classes sound something like this?
Water molecule is polar with a partial negative charge on the oxygen
but
atom.
But what if those classes sounded like this?
Things get really horrible as his skin rips apart and he sees a virus coming out from his insides.
I'm Guy Raz. Ideas about changing education next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock and Wednesday evenings at 11 on Maine Public Radio. You're listening to your regular programming today, thanks to the One Day Summer Super Thursday campaign. A huge thank you. for those who called or pledged online at mainepublic.org. With a little help from an early morning finish this morning, we made our important goals. Over $200,000 was raised, and we welcomed in over 500 new members in support of Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical. It's never too late. If you missed Super Thursday, please visit mainepublic.org and click on the support button. Thank you. And thanks to all of you who contributed, and of course to all of you who are ongoing continuing supporters. Public Radio is public radio because of you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking about elderberries. My guest today, Tori Lee Jackson. She's an extension educator and associate professor of agriculture and natural resources at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension based in Lisbon Falls. And Ethan Foyt is an organic elderberry farmer based in Monmouth. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us now on the line is Edie Johnston. She owns Elder Tide Farm and Medicinals in Dresden. Welcome, Edie.
Thanks so much for having me.
Of course, I understand you're one of the pioneers in growing and learning about elderberries in Maine. What do you do at your farm?
Well, we grow antioxidant-rich berries and botanicals that become the raw products for our company, Maine Medicinals. Maine Medicinals manufactures plant-based medicines. My son, Gio, actually is the director of operations and handles the day-to-day work there. And I oversee the farm operations and our federally funded research that's been, we've been fortunate to work with USDA, NIFA, the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, and most recently the Department of Defense, looking at antioxidant-rich berries, specifically grown in Maine.
I understand that for a millennia, people have used elderberries as medicines. How are they used? What are they? How are they processed? Is it tea? Is it tincture? Is it those two and more? And what are they used for?
Well, our product Anthoimmune is an organic elderberry syrup, but elderberries can also provide those important antioxidants and phytonutrients through tinctures, through glycerides, and as teas. Both the berries and the flowers have important contributions to maintaining one's health. And most frequently, you can associate elderberries with supporting the immune system overall. There's also research that confirms that they have antiviral practices. So during cold and flu season, that's our busiest season at Maine Medicinals, just because of those qualities that are found in elderberry plant-based medicines.
Edie, I want to read you a Facebook post from Elizabeth and see what your response is. She writes, sure. I was told about elderberry syrup by my coworker who found it very helpful for getting over colds or avoiding getting sick in the wintertime. She took it every day. I started taking it as well, but I actually had the opposite effect. I started feeling worse. And as I investigated further, I learned that those with autoimmune diseases or overactive immune system, it can actually be detrimental. Do you know about this?
I do. And autoimmune diseases in themselves are very difficult to predict what's going to help and what's going to exacerbate the condition. We have a lot of our customers who call and talk to us. And some people have found antioxidants to be helpful, and others have reported that they haven't been helpful, or they have actually set up some counterindications for that. So very important to check with your healthcare professional before you're looking for anything that's going to support your immune system if you are unfortunate enough to have an autoimmune disease.
And Edie, I want to ask you this, and as well as the guests in our studio, what do you think the demand is for elderberries? Have you seen it grow? And if so, what do you think the potential for the industry in Maine is?
Well, I think there is an increased demand, certainly judging by the calls and emails that I'm getting and the questions on my Facebook page. People are really interested in natural-based remedies and additions to their lifestyles that can improve their health. And if elderberry is one of those things, they want to know about it.
Edie, can you hear us? What do you think about the potential for this crop? Shoot, it seems to me we might have lost Edie. That was Edie Johnston. She owns Elder Tide Farm and Medicinals in Dresden. Let's see. We'll go with Lynn, who's calling from the Lewiston, Auburn area. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. We have elderberry bushes on our property from an old farmstead. We've lived here for over 40 years. But I have a concern and a question about the American elderberry. I have read and have also heard from people who grow them that the seeds, stems, leaves, and roots are all poisonous to humans. They contain cyanide-inducing glycoside. And if you eat sufficient quantities, you can cause a toxic buildup of cyanide in your body and make you quite ill. So how are elderberries processed to make sure that the green berries and the seeds and the stems are not a part of any products that you're selling?
That's a great question. So the chemical that you're finding in all parts of the plant, but specifically in highest concentration in the stems and leaves, is hydrogen cyanide. And so there are reported cases of, for example, children playing around elderberries, maybe using them as toys and hitting each other with them. You can actually get a toxic response to that because your body will turn that into cyanide. However, luckily, it's very easy to denature that particular compound, and that's done through heating, which is part of virtually every product that you're going to be purchasing, whether that is something off the shelf at a grocery store or something from a farmer who's doing value-added production. It's not too much of a process, and I would feel very safe from any of those particular concerns that you might have.
But if you do have elderberry bushes on your property or trees on your property, mm-hmm. depending what you call them, to maybe keep children away from them and some pets?
It's something you want to make sure that they're just not sticking in their mouths. I wouldn't consider it a danger. I'm not scared of the elderberries I have on my property. I'm not scared of my kids being in them. I have three young children. I wouldn't want children sticking them in their mouths. I wouldn't want dogs and things like that eating them.
Okay. Lynn, thanks for your call. Good question. And I think we have, let's see, we have Edie left. Edie's back. Are you there, Edie?
I am. Sorry, we were disconnected, but fortunately, I'm back with you.
Okay. Terrific. I just wanted to ask about what you believe is the potential for elderberries as a crop in Maine.
I think it has a really strong potential. There's a bit of a learning curve for any new specialty crop grown in Maine, but our harsh winter climates seem to support the notion that Maine's ideally suited to produce very high antioxidant levels in these what I call superfruits. There's now a growing body of support, certainly including Tory Jackson and Maine Technology Institute and Coastal Enterprises, to help people gain a better understanding of this emerging crop. And I know right now Maine Medicinals is raw product constrained, meaning that we just can't buy enough and grow enough elderberries to move our Anthoimmune into national distribution, which we would love to do. I think that there are other emerging markets that are happening, certainly specialty foods and wine being too.
Great. Well, Edie, thank you so much for calling in and for being persistent and calling back.
That's right. Thanks so much.
Edie Johnston, she owns Elder Tide Farm and Medicinals in Dresden. We'll go with Kai, who's calling from Phippsburg. Hi, Kai. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yes. Good afternoon, and thank you for this program. Listen, I have a whole bunch of elderberries, and I have a whole bunch of comments. I'm originally from Germany, and in Germany, old foundations all have elderberries around them because it used to be common knowledge or superstition that elderberries kept lightning away, and with thatched roofs, that was catastrophic if you had a lightning strike. The other thing is, in Germany, at least the ones I know, the elderberries grow to become trees. I mean, it's The stems are as fat as my arm. Now, the other thing I wanted to pass by, I have a bunch of elderberries of all different kinds that I bought from Fedco and from Virginia, and they seem to do very differently at different spots. I had three plants that I planted in one spot, and one was really not doing so well. I moved it, and it's like 12 times as big as all the others now, so it's touch and go. Also, I had a friend that in Searsport, he bought $1,000 worth of elderberry plants from Fedco, planted them on his newly purchased land, and he was getting a return of $9,000 every year from a winery. Now, from there, I thought he was a wonderful source for knowledge and everything, and when the birds discovered my elderberries, I had suddenly none, because I have a steam juicer, which makes wonderful juice. By the way, the Germans have the most amount of information pertaining to elderberries and its medicinal effects. They've done it very scientifically. So anyway, when I called him, I said, what do you do against the birds? He said, nothing. They discovered my elderberries, and I have zero crop this year. So cheap source for netting, and publish that on the radio or explain that on the radio, I would really be appreciative.
Thank you, Ethan. Do you use netting?
I don't use netting. I haven't had as much problem with birds that some of the other people locally have. When I do have problems with birds, I use bird tape. It's a hologram tape that you can stretch over your elderberries. It doesn't work for long. It'll give you like a 2-week window, but it usually buys me enough time to bring my crop in. And it's a lot cheaper, and it's a lot easier to put out than netting. Netting is it's not the most expensive thing in the world, but it's more expensive than bird tape, and it's pretty labor-intensive putting it out.
So the bird tape is that flashy tape you see sometimes. So the birds, it takes them a couple weeks to figure out that it's not dangerous.
They do figure it out pretty quick, but it gives you enough of a window to get your crop in.
Okay. Any thoughts, Tori?
Yeah, I think, you know, people who are interested in netting should, you know, definitely take a look at the size netting that you're going to be using, because there's another purpose that you might want to net your elderberries for, and that is against a new pest that we will be doing some more research on, the spotted-winged Drosophila, which threatens a lot of the soft-bodied fruits that ripen, you know, August, September, and October. We do see this as probably the most important threat to the increase of commercial production of elderberry. However, if you are able to get a finely gauged net, you can actually keep them out. So it's a pretty expensive proposition, but it's potentially one of the only ways to grow elderberries organically using nets to help you.
And we're talking about netting, and we're talking about them growing into trees. Is there a way to prune them to keep them into a control of size, a size that one could toss a net over instead of having to use a bucket truck?
Well, when the trees that he was talking about are European elderberries, they do grow more into a tree. But the elderberries we have here are a little bit different. They're a lot more bush-like.
How tall are yours?
My tallest are 14 feet.
Okay.
And that's getting a little tall for netting. They'll push through netting pretty quick. And they get big really quick, too. So if you're planning in year two on netting, I would triple that size.
Yeah, it's one thing to consider when you're out there pruning, just like you would in an apple orchard. How tall do you want these things to get just for management purposes? If left to their own devices, they can get very, very large, and it's impressive. And in a backyard, maybe that's fine. But if you're growing commercially and you want to be able to put a consistent height net over the entire row, then you're going to have to prune them somewhat in the winter.
And unlike a tree, you can prune these, and you're not going to harm them at all.
That's great. Kai, thanks so much for calling in. I'm going to go to an email from Joan, because it's kind of related to what we're talking about. Do deer like to snack on elderberry bushes? So we've now learned that birds do.
Some people have a lot of trouble with deer. Deer are a bigger problem in the first 2 or 3 years. When the plants are still small, a freshly planted, like a 1-year-old elderberry tree, like a deer can come through and pretty much kill. Where a 4 or 5-year-old elderberry tree, a deer might take a little bit of your production of the year away, but it's not going to destroy it. Some people use deer fences. Other people buy scents that they put out. Fedco sells a deer deterrent that's made from blood meal that's organic. So they can be a pest, and there are multiple ways to deal with them.
Okay. An email from Susan. I live along a saltwater tidal river. Is there a salt-tolerant variety your guests would recommend, and where can I get them in Maine? I would like to remove some invasive honeysuckle and plant elderberries in their place. So elderberries are related to honeysuckle, right, Tori? So would they grow in the same place?
You know, excepting for the salt concentration in the soil, I would say this is probably the ideal switch to make. I am definitely in favor of removing invasives like honeysuckle. It's tough to say how closely you can get to a saltwater marsh and still expect an elderberry to do well. I have not done a lot of foraging in areas where that is the case. However, it's certainly worth giving it a try and seeing how tolerant an elderberry would be in that environment.
All right. And would someplace like Fedco have a recommendation for you if you contacted them?
Yeah. They may. And that's something we might look at. We're putting in a variety trial next summer, and that's something we may look into as well.
Yeah, there's no real playbook right now for elderberries. If you're going to grow them, that's your roadblock right there. There's not a lot known. So I'd say try it and then let us know.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that what your recommendation would be for Susan? Give it a try and call me.
In a case like that, yeah, there's really no data out there. There is a production guide that came out last year from the University of Vermont, and Maine collaborated on that as well. So we can post a link to that. It's available for free as a PDF on their website. So there is some great basic growing information, but I don't think salinity tolerance is part of that yet.
Okay, well, we do have to take another short break, but first, a quick word about Monday's program. On Monday, we're going to talk about indoor air quality, things including radon, mold, and more. Are you worried about the air you breathe at home or work? What questions do you have? You can send us an email ahead of time, talk@mainecalling.org. You can tweet or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Ocean View at Falmouth, proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera, which airs tomorrow afternoon beginning at 1 o'clock on Maine Public Classical.
Many of New England's ancient sewage systems date back to a time long before we worried about what goes into our rivers, lakes, and streams. Now there's a push to keep out even more pollutants, but at what cost?
Part of me wants to go with the popular idea, let's never dump anything into the river. What I'm trying to wrap my head around is it could be worse.
What it takes to clean up our waterways, on Next from the New England News Collaborative.
Are you a teacher planning your course schedule for the upcoming school year? Maine Public has a powerful educational resource for teachers here in Maine, PBS Learning Media. Learning Media is an on-demand media service for educators that provides easy access to a wide range of classroom-ready, curriculum-targeted resources for grades K through 12. Why not check it out? Go to mainepublic.org for more information and to explore this free educational resource.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, elderberries. Joining me today, Tori Jackson, an educator with the UMaine Cooperative Extension, and Ethan Foyt. He owns Scarecrow Farm, where he grows organic elderberries. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566, going to Helen calling from Kennebunk. Hi, Helen. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. I grew up in the Hudson Valley near on the opposite side of the Hudson from Saratoga Springs on a farm that had been in the family since the 1700s. And my memory of elderberries is that when Dad would get the hay done, he would go off to this far end of the property where there were elderberries and pick a pail full and bring it home. And we would spend hours picking those elderberries off those little stems. So, and Mother made several pies, and that was the end of elderberries. So I wonder, how do you process, those of you who are raising elderberries and processing them or so forth, how are they processed to get those little elderberries off the stems without getting the stems in?
Production's definitely a big issue, especially with it being such a new crop. A very popular way is freezing. So taking all those umbras with those little stems, putting them in a garbage bag and putting them in the freezer and letting them freeze, and then taking them out. And they pretty much fall off after that. If you shake the umbra, they'll come right off. The trick I've found with that is if you leave those elderberries in the freezer too long, those little twigs dry out and become brittle, and then they're almost impossible to get out of the elderberries because then you have a bunch of berries and a bunch of microscopic pieces of wood.
So how long would you recommend putting them in the freezer for?
A day. A day is best.
Okay.
As soon as they freeze. You can also take those umbers. Some people in different varieties behave different ways. But I found really ripe elderberries, the longer you wait, the easier they are to get off the bush. So we measure ripeness in brinks. So if you can test the brinks with something called a refractor, you would get a brinks of 11 to 12. That means they're really, really ripe. It means the sugar is really high. And those are going to fall off the bush a lot easier. And you can tell brinks also by color. When they go from that red to a deep purple, it means that they're ready to come off. And those are going to come off a lot easier than the ones that aren't quite as ripe. And those you can bang against a bucket or even get off with your fingers.
Okay, good question, Helen. We'll go to Jocko calling from Abbott. Hi, Jocko. Go ahead.
Hi. This year I planted 15 elderberries, and I packed them real good with rabbit manure. And I'm getting a lot of flowers. And I just thought I would say that the smell is really amazing. And I was just wondering if there are things that people do with the flowers.
Absolutely. Some people are really specializing in the production of flowers over fruit. You may be familiar with the liqueur Saint Germain, which is actually flavored with elderberry flowers. So there's definitely a market for the flowers themselves. And there's the aroma that you get from a flower really varies from variety to variety. And certainly between the two different species, the Nigra, which is the European elderberry, and the Canadensis, which is the American native.
All right. A related call. We've got Ron in Surrey. Hi, Ron. Go ahead.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I've been growing elderberries here for several years. And we use just the flowers, and we make this wonderful, delicious wine with the flowers. Put in a little few raisins, give it sugar, and let it ferment, and let it set in a jar or bottle someplace for a couple of months. And by God, you can't beat it. Plus, it's a medicine.
Sounds good.
Yeah, you can make a white wine with the flowers or a red with the berries. And everybody that I've ever talked to that's had either has been a huge fan. I've never heard anybody say that they didn't like elderberry wine.
No.
Oh, really? Ron, I don't know if you're a Facebook person, but if you want to post your recipe, I'm sure there are people listening right now who would appreciate it. And thanks so much for calling. We'll go to Bill calling from Waterboro. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Yeah, you know, you answered my question already.
Okay.
I was trying to think of how to pick the little berries off the stems without leaving those little bead pieces. I make jam, and you just can't have jam with all those little stems on them.
Yeah, and when you make jam, you're probably taking one that isn't quite as ripe because you want that pectin. So in that case, I'd definitely freeze them and then take them off.
So freeze them overnight.
Freeze them overnight or until they're frozen, and then get them off as quickly as you can.
Good luck, Bill. Hopefully we've been helpful today. We'll go to, let's see here. We've got, so many emails. Let's see. How about Matt on Facebook who says, what kind of crop yield do you usually get?
That's another one that's way over the map. I have, with my 200 elderberries, right, 200 elder bushes that I have right now. Sorry, somebody said 200. I've gotten 700 pounds the last 2 years, so 3.5 pounds per bush. European varieties in Europe do a lot higher.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of just trying to figure it out here.
That's part of the reason behind the variety trial is to really find the varieties that do best here to give us the highest yields. It's one of the bigger unanswered questions that we have.
Yeah.
Carolyn emails us to ask, please talk about how and when to prune the bushes.
I wouldn't prune them at all for the first 3 or 4 years. When it gets to a point, if you're making rows, don't let them grow out of the rows because they'll pretty quickly, if you have like a tractor or a cart path in between, they'll fill that right in. But you're getting your fruit, the majority of your fruit off the second, third, and fourth year stalk. So you really don't want to cut those down. Now, when they get into the sixth, seventh, eighth year, those are stalks you probably want to cut and let newer stalks come in.
Yeah, and you're really looking at the dead of winter when things are definitely dormant. March is a great time to be pruning when the snow starts to recede, but you know everything is still dormant. You can get in there and prune. Obviously, taking out any dead or damaged canes, inking as much airflow as you can throughout the plant so that you don't have any potential for diseases to get started.
A tweet from Elle. Are all elderberry plants edible? I've seen black elderberry plants and the foliage is beautiful, but can the berries be eaten? Also, I have what looks exactly like elderberry bushes growing wild with red berries. Might this be a different plant?
It might be. There is a red elderberry, which is different from the elderberries that we're talking about here today. Some of them are okay to eat and some aren't. So if you're not sure what you've got, I would definitely have it identified. That's one thing that you can count on your local extension office to help with. If you can bring in a sample, ideally with some fruit and some flowers, we can tell you exactly what you've got.
Okay, but if she has a black elderberry plant, that probably is edible.
It depends on what she means by black.
Yeah.
So there are two major varieties or species of elderberry, Sambucus nigra, which is the native in Europe. And nigra may be what she's referring to here as the black elderberry. Certainly those are edible, but they don't tend to do well here, which is why we're really focusing on the Native American canadensis.
Yeah, it sounds like she's talking about the elderberries that we grow. The riper they get, the darker they get.
We have an email from Will. I grow, I hope I'm pronouncing this right, aronia on a small scale. I'm curious if your panel can discuss the value of aronia berry versus elderberry as a crop here in Maine.
Aronia has an extremely high antioxidant level, a lot like elderberry. I don't know that it's caught on as much for things like pies and other types of foods. I think it definitely has a medicinal use.
Yes.
On par with elderberries. I don't know if it has the same level with wines and alcohols and food, but I don't know as much about it as I do elderberries.
Yeah, it's fairly typical for growers to grow them side by side. They do have similar growing requirements, and uses are the same across many of the different food type products as well. And actually, the anthocyanin content, which is the functional part of that, is higher in aronia than it is in elderberry.
Is aronia also native?
Yeah, we call them choke cherries or choke berries.
Oh, okay.
And you can find information about that on the Extension website as well.
All right. Lynn sent an email. How are the flowers harvested?
Late June, early July, you would clip them. Again, it's an umbra. So when you're clipping one flower, you're clipping 100 to 1,000 flowers, and then dry them.
Okay. Let's see. We have so many emails here. I planted an elderberry bush 15 years ago for the birds. A couple years ago, I noticed it was completely dead, but there were a couple new bushes next to it. Any idea why it died?
They run. They don't run as much as brambles, like raspberries and blackberries, but they move. You know, it's not an oak tree that's going to stay in the same spot for 100 years unless you force it. You know, they're going to send out shoots, and they're going to send up new branches, and the 10-year branches they're not going to put as much into as the first-year branches. And they quite literally in 10, 20 years will walk across your lawn, walk across your farm.
All right. Interesting. Going to Becky in Winter Harbor. Hi, Becky. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Yes, I elderberries, and I take them off when they're ripe, and I freeze them off the stems. And then when I make my applesauce in the fall, I throw the elderberries in the batch of applesauce, and I can pints after pints of it. And so every day I have a little quarter cup of my applesauce, which has the medicine and the elderberries in with it. And that's the way that I use my elderberries.
Perfect.
Yeah, there are a lot of ways to kind of get your daily elderberry. People have their maybe their ice cube trays are filled with some elderberry juice and you put it in your tea every morning. Maybe take some of Edie's syrup, have it in a baked good or a little bit of something that you've preserved yourself. But that is a very traditional use of elderberry.
Tinctures, different things like that.
Becky, thanks so much for your call. And you are going to be our last call this hour. What a fun hour learning about elderberries. Ethan and Tori, thank you so much for joining us here today. Ethan Foyt, an organic elderberry farmer at Scarecrow Farm in Monmouth. And Tori Jackson, an educator and associate professor with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension in Lisbon Falls. Sandra Harris ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our archives, at mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.